Pop Culture Meltdown.
Episode 11. Pop Culture Meltdown. Chris Libertini, Lou Pellegrino.
What's up, man?
How you doing, baby?
Oh, I can't complain. Yeah. And if I did, no one would listen anyway.
Well, that's a good point. We aren't listening already, Lou. What's going on?
Nothing much. Nothing much, man. Just enjoying the last couple of days of warm weather, I think.
Oh, so, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, living at the beach is nice.
We are in New York City. Louis lives in Jersey, and so do I. And we'll get right to it. Coming up on the show, we got Banksy, we got Rick and Morty, we got Doctor Who, and Louis watched a movie called Tag. Let's get right to it and talk about Banksy.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
And I have to say, the balls on that guy or girl.
He's got a pair. She's got a pair, too.
He or she has a pair because I don't know the official, you know, gender of Banksy, but whatever Banksy does, it's always phenomenal. And he might be the greatest sleight of hand person since Harry Houdini.
Agreed. And what Lou is talking about
is, I don't even think Harry Houdini was sleight of hand.
That's a good point. But they're talking about Sotheby's in London on Friday. They sold the image of a girl reaching out for that red heart-shaped balloon.
Yep.
$1.4
million. $1
million. And
that was a very bad Dr. Evil.
Horrific.
Horrible.
But the bottom line of the whole thing is, moments after it was sold, a shredder hidden inside the picture frame began to start moving, and the canvas slid down, and at least, 30%, 40% of it
A little bit more than that. I would say a good, 60% of it.
What goes on?
Yeah.
So immediately, there's a built-in shredder, so you gotta think, somebody was there, if not Banksy himself, herself.
With a remote control. Or at least it was timed.
Yeah, well, come on.
But time that down to the second. Yes. So you're right. Probably it was a remote control shredder.
Yes, somebody's got to be there and move and groove and hit a button, and all of a sudden the thing starts shredding.
It's absolutely mind-blowingly phenomenal and genius.
So does that take the sale and null it?
I would think so. I don't know. Actually, I don't know how it works. Are all sales final when the gavel hits?
I don't know.
That has to be horrible, because here's a monstrous payday of $1.4 million for a Banksy, and then the thing gets destroyed right in front of your face.
And then Banksy published a video on Instagram that purported to show how he built a paper shredder. Oh, they're saying he built a paper shredder.
In this day and age, you never know.
That's a good point. Well, he actually started off as a woman, but then became a man.
Got
so that's
it.
How it happened.
Okay.
He built a paper shredder into the frame of the 2006 painting and then wrote the quote under it. It's Picasso. The urge to destroy is also a creative urge. So there you go.
Absolute brilliance.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute brilliance. I mean, could you imagine doing that, or just having the sack to do that?
It's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. And
hey, you're
going to
buy my painting for $1.4 million. Now, would Banksy have received that money? Or did some, you know what I'm saying? Like, who put that photo, that painting, that picture up for auction? I really need to do better prep, I guess, or I have to read it a little bit more. But I just saw the video and I was at a loss for words. Like, oh my God, this is brilliant.
It's pretty amazing.
But I do feel bad for the person who shelled out the 1.4, because once that gavel hits, all sales are final. Man.
Then you paid for that for damaged goods.
But you know what I would do, though? Because if you saw the way the painting came out, it came out almost like when you make your own homemade spaghetti or you make your own homemade pasta. It came out with shreds. I'd hang that on the wall.
Why not?
I would say, this is Banksy's art.
Right.
This is what Banksy did. Banksy did this. He created the photo. He destroyed the photo. You have half of it, so you know that there's the heart and the strand of the string from the balloon, and the other parts just hang underneath.
I try to
keep that in as pristine as a position as possible.
I think it almost makes it more expensive.
I think it does, too.
Yeah.
Considering now, in this social media age, how many people saw this video, I guarantee you there would be art collectors who would shell out major, major bucks for a piece of art made, created, and destroyed by Banksy.
I love it. And they're also talking that, you know, they're saying, was Banksy at the auction? And they said that somebody started filming when the painting was being destroyed.
Right.
Somebody with dark rim sunglasses was filming, And then footage circulating on the internet shows a middle-aged man wearing thick-rim sunglasses filming the moment when the picture is shredded, and then shortly after, the man seen being escorted out of the room. So that could have been Banksy or one of the associates of Banksy.
It's brilliant because you know what? It's his art. He should be allowed to destroy it if he wants to, or to do a publicity stunt like this. Somebody walking in and destroying, you know, Dali's The Screaming Man or whatever. That's a little bit different. You know, that's right. Is that Salvador Dali who did that?
So. Right, I believe you're correct.
And if he did that, or, you know, if somebody puts their elbow through a Van Gogh or a Picasso, you know, we had that little boy who actually tripped and fell, and I think he put his hand through a very expensive painting a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, that sucks because, oh, that's me. I'm sorry. I'm playing with a piece of paper right here because I, you know, don't have a fidget spinner like you do.
Right, exactly.
Mr. ADD personified.
Fidget spin all day long, baby.
Please, those things are the dumbest things ever. And you went and bought like 17 of them.
Well, to be honest, it was given to me. Sure. But let's talk about from one art brilliance to another art brilliance, Rick and Morty.
Hoo-wee!
Oh, that clip you showed me. Oh my goodness, so funny.
It's Adult Swim put out Rick and Morty's Pickle Rick episode, and they put out the 4-minute outtake of Justin Roiland struggling to do Rick's part, actually talking about being a pickle. And it is absolutely fantastic.
I wish more cartoons did stuff like this. I know there's probably a lot of time and effort put into this, but, you know, it started when you would go to, like, retrojunk.com or whatever that site was, and you would see the Thundercats outtakes where they're all cursing. And I think we've brought that up on mm-hmm. you know, that thing on this podcast before. But that is so much fun because I could just imagine a show like Rick and Morty or another show like Family Guy where you see they actually put animation to the mess ups.
It's tremendous.
To the bloopers.
Tremendous.
I think it's fantastic. And that Rick and Morty bit, oh my, well, Pickle Rick might be one of my favorite characters of all time.
It's absolutely fantastic. And he struggles through it for about 4 minutes.
Right.
And he just sits there laughing his ass off.
Right.
Because, I mean, think about it. You have an amazing show. You have a great time doing it. People follow it. It's a cult following. It's in the lexicon of what we're doing now in life.
Of course, yes.
And now you come up with this amazing scene and you can't get it out. Amazing.
Well, I think also what happens when you're someone like that, you know the punchlines, you know what the vibe is you're going for, that you just can't get out of your own way sometimes and you can't stop laughing. Everybody goes through laughing fits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could remember a friend of mine, it wouldn't be as funny now because it's a third-hand story, but he would always mismatch or misplace the first letters of words. So instead he was supposed to say, I went and got my buckets ticked. He went and get my I got my tickets booked, and he said, I got my buckets ticked. And in the moment, so you hear someone make that error, and all of a sudden you just can't stop laughing, and then 5 minutes later it's like, you know, I went to get my tickets booked, right?
Absolutely, yes, tremendous. Well, let's take a listen to your boy Justin Roiland trying to struggle to get this out in the Pickle Rick episode.
To go.
Rick, did you do this on purpose to get out of family counseling?
Morty!
It's okay, Beth. I'm not offended. I understand Morty's suspicion. I've misled him before. Morty, turn me so we're making eye contact.
And this is amazing, okay, because he's laughing through the whole thing.
It's okay, Beth. I'm not offended. I understand Morty's suspicion.
And it's hilarious to watch a pickle laughing the whole time.
Oh, sure. They animated this perfectly.
This fucking moment is so fucking good. Oh, hold on. Okay. Oh, my God.
And he resets.
Okay. Okay.
Ooh, okay. Okay. Okay.
No, Beth, it's okay. I'm not offended. I understand Morty's suspicion. I've misled him before. Morty, turn me so we're making eye contact. One more time.
It's so funny to watch a pickle laugh.
Well, the other thing is, like, you can just see him sitting there, and he knows exactly where he gets tripped up, and he still can't get past it.
He can't do it.
And my favorite part of the thing is the exhale.
Yeah. Okay. And he's trying to hold his shit together. Okay.
But, like, I joke around with you before you do your reads and copy reads and all that for voiceover and imaging work. You say what?
Well, you got to get in the you got to get in a character mode. You got to get in an emotion of when you're doing voiceover. So, mm-hmm. you know, he's doing his Pickle Rick episode. He's got to put on this voice and get into it. So, I mean, he can get into it however he wants, or maybe it's so natural for him that he just goes right into it.
Right.
For me, I act like I'm talking to my parents. So, or I'm talking to one of my relatives or talking to somebody that I know because I'm putting on a character mm-hmm. to talk to them. You're not going to speak the same way to your father as sure. you do your mother. You're mm-hmm. not going to speak the same way to your buddy as you do to your sister. You know, that type of stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, it's used as devices to get into the role. So, exactly correct. I'll say my dad's name. I'll say my mom's name.
Sure.
I'll say my sister's name, and then I'll just kind of go in. And obviously, with Pickle Rick, I'm sure he's right into it.
But I just think it's so funny because he's trying to center himself. He's trying to get the giggles out. He's trying to stop the laughter. So, the whole deep breath in, deep breath out, and then he does the... Okay.
And he's doing it again. So fucking great. Okay.
It's tremendous.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's so funny. That show is absolutely a riot.
I'm not offended.
I love it.
I understand.
It really is. Well, we're excited for Rick and Morty. We're excited that they do Pickle Rick outtakes, and it's got 453,476 views on October 9th at 5:20 in the afternoon, which is when we're recording this podcast. Let's go from something crazy and whacked out and spacey to something crazy, whacked out, and spacey. Doctor Who came out with their first episode. It's season 11, and it's episode number 1, and the episode name is The Woman Who Fell from Earth. Why is it called The Woman Who Fell from Earth?
Because it's an honor, a tribute to Mr. David Bowie, Mr. David Jones, who was the man who fell to Earth.
Very nice. Well, it starts off...
I still can't believe he's no longer...
He's with all of us.
I wear a t-shirt that has Ziggy Stardust on it every once in a while. I look down at his face, and I just can't believe he's no longer here. But anyway, we move on. Doctor Who...
Of course.
The woman who fell to... Is it the girl who fell to Earth or the woman who fell to Earth?
It is... The woman who fell to Earth.
I want to make sure that I get it right.
Yep, it was filmed in Cardiff. Big deal. They didn't have an opening title. Big deal.
You sound unhappy.
In my opinion, listen, there's a big meme that's out there talking about the phases of Doctor Who, like mm-hmm. it's a big clock.
Okay.
The 1 to 3 of the clock is, what am I watching? Who is this person? I don't like this. I can't get used to it. The 3 to 6 is, maybe this person's not so bad, kind of growing on me. The 6 to 9, I love this doctor. The doctor's amazing. And then finally the 9 to 12, please don't go. I don't want another doctor. I just want this doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And in this first episode, the doctor comes in about 8 minutes in.
Let's get a shift on.
Literally falling into the shot, right?
Okay.
Like the woman who fell from Earth. In my mind, the show is called Doctor Who. It's not called everybody else that's on the flipping show, okay?
Okay.
So focus on the doctor, right?
Got it.
I don't care if it's a woman. I don't care if it's emotional amoeba. I don't care if it's a dog. If it's the doctor, focus on the doctor. If it's a dog and the dog is itching himself and taking a crap on the lawn, I want to see that for the first 25 minutes of the show. I didn't see the doctor for the first 8 minutes, and all of a sudden the doctor pops in and has like a whole entire thing. First problem.
Okay.
Second problem is the doctor flies around in the TARDIS.
Sure, I know that.
Okay.
Yep.
Time and relative dimension in space is what TARDIS stands for. And this whole first episode, no TARDIS. So in the in the last season that they had with Peter Capaldi, they again have no TARDIS. Okay.
Okay.
And they're revisiting no TARDIS again. Give me a break. The show is with the TARDIS. You can't. It's like having Michael Knight without Kit.
Ooh.
That's what it is, okay?
Yeah.
Legitimately. It's a living, breathing thing. It responds. It has a personality. It's a whole deal. That was missing. Problem. The third one that I have to say about it is the doctor has a sonic screwdriver, okay? And the sonic screwdriver is super awesome, and it can only be made in a TARDIS. And all of a sudden, the doctor has no screwdriver.
Okay.
Totally cool. So the doctor has no screwdriver. So it's a whole deal.
You getting this?
The doctor
has no screwdriver.
Yeah, we're talking about Doctor Who. John Batchelor just walked in. And John, we'll get to you in 2 seconds. We're just talking about the sonic screwdriver. Very, very big things here.
It's a very important thing, John.
Very,
pay attention.
Very important thing.
Pay attention.
So we're talking about sonic screwdriver, how the doctor, how it works is, we're talking about the TARDIS, right?
Yes.
So in the TARDIS, it's a living, breathing thing. And what it does is it gives the doctor his/hers sonic screwdriver, which is the doctor's main quote-unquote weapon. Okay. The doctor doesn't have a gun or a bazooka or whatever. It just has a sonic. And the doctor uses the sonic for many, many things. It takes temperature readings. It takes your pulse. It scans for life forms. It's everything. It's like, it's called the Swiss Army knife of whatever you're using.
Got it.
And the doctor called it, in this one, the Swiss Army sonic, made with...
plutonium?
No, made with Sheffield steel.
Oh, Sheffield, England. Oh,
exactly.
Is it Sheffield, England?
Exactly, okay. Correct. Great.
You know who's from Sheffield, England?
Speak to me.
Def Leppard.
Oh, really? One-armed drummers named Rick Allen are fantastic. And honestly, if you're going to have an album and call it Hysteria, I'm in. I'm way in. But let's wrap this up real quick. So they're talking about the sonic screwdriver. No, it has not changed its name to Swiss Army Sonic. It's just going to be a regular sonic screwdriver.
Got it.
All right, let's talk about this movie, Tag. It's about a bunch of guys that had this tag game when they were kids. It's your boy Ed Helms.
Yep.
It's got your boy John Hamm.
Yep.
Who else?
Jake Johnson, Isla Fisher, Hannibal Buress, Jeremy Renner.
Yep.
I mean, all these guys, Little Ray Howerly.
And it's Isla. It's Isla Fisher.
Is it really?
Yes, it is.
All right, so Isla Fisher, and she's married to Borat.
Yep, Sacha Baron Cohen. Yep.
So Leslie Bibb is in the movie. She's hot. Rashida Jones. I'm a big fan of Rashida Jones.
Yep, me too.
Tell me about the movie. Did you like it?
You know what? It was a lot of fun because you know it's not going to win any Oscars. Mm-hmm. It's not going to get that critical acclaim. It's a true story based on a bunch of friends.
True story!
Who said really a nice little real world callback.
That's nice.
But yeah, it's a true story based on some friends who started this game of tag. And the best part of the movie is it's actually something different.
Really?
It's something fun.
It's refreshing.
There's a story line that goes along with it where, you know, Jeremy Renner, his character, has never been tagged. And these guys spend the entire movie trying to figure out a way to get him tagged. And he's almost like a Navy SEAL where he just is able to thwart every attempt. I'm not going to go too deep into the movie because if you want to have some fun this weekend, have a couple of pops with your friends, your buddies, your old lady, whatever... it's a fun movie. It moves quick. It's funny. There's some really good one-liners. Everybody's really good in it. There's nobody that's really dragging the film down or somebody who's really annoying. It's a very good movie. And at the end, they actually show video footage of the guys who created and based this, who this movie was based on. And it's cool watching these guys get totally surprised and bombarded by being tagged during this game.
Now, this is literally just somebody touches you.
Correct.
So they
you're it.
They didn't touch this guy for 20 years?
They could not get him for 20 years.
Stop it!
Because here's the thing.
They couldn't hug him?
Because here's the thing. It only takes place during 1 month. It's during a month. It's the month of May or the month of March. I can't remember which month.
Okay.
But for 20 years, the entire month, it's tag month. And it's
so
great.
So the guy's just out of excommunicado for the entire month?
Yeah, well...
and they have to, like, stalk him?
Right, that's exactly
they
it.
They have to
that
stalk
is exactly
they show up at his work.
Yep, so if you're going to ask for a recommendation this weekend coming up, I know it's only Wednesday because we're recording this on Tuesday and the podcast drops on Wednesday on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast, leave us a rating and review. God, I feel like I'm sailing this show.
Love it.
But yes, take a couple of hours, not even a couple of hours, it's like an hour and 45 minutes, I think, and rent Tag. If you have Amazon Prime or Netflix or wherever you can find it, just watch it. I thought it was creative, which is something that we haven't seen a lot of lately, and I just thought it was a really good movie.
Tremendous. And without any further ado, John Batchelor, Tag, you're in!
And now it's time for news on Pop Culture Meltdown. It's A Bite with Batchelor, starring John Batchelor. Let's eat food and get knowledge.
John Batchelor's been flown in from the studio right next door. Good to have you again, John. How are you?
Yes, I was enjoying banana cake before you called me to work.
Ooh.
Oh, so you've been eating?
Yes, banana cake.
But I thought that the rule was you can't eat when you broadcast.
A relative made the banana cake, so I couldn't lie.
Understood.
Yes, I tried it. I tried it.
So you went right in with the banana cake.
I had a bite of banana cake. It's not bad.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Banana cake is relaxing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's completely out of step with what we're about to talk about.
This is very true. And yes. Banana cake, very healthy.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So let's talk about baseball right back into it. The playoffs are going strong. The Yankees and the Red Sox are back and forth. And there's been horrible umpiring, John. Horrible. Like, not good. Not great.
Ugh.
Terrible.
Angel Hernandez.
Explain, please. Okay. Yes. Yeah, this is hard to believe that it's real. So, he's reading now. He's not making this
right
up.
This is from a Yahoo Sports article by famed baseball writer Jeff Passan, who's an awesome guy, MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports.
He's all right. He's okay.
He's a good dude. So it says, Angel Hernandez alleges Major League Baseball discriminated against him because he's of a Latino descent by declining to name him a crew chief and preventing him from working World Series games. And after the performance last night, I think this is all hogwash.
What we have here is the camera. The camera made an entry onto the field a few years back. I don't know how old is this. We don't need the camera. I'm it's not a purist or anything. Baseball is a game of action, and when you freeze it and go over and over and over again, you're breaking the pace, and you're introducing a non-human element that's unwelcome. So a call is missed. It's human beings.
But at the same point, when a call can determine the whole outcome of the game and they want to get it right.
No, never. There's always a new direction to go. That's why there's no two things that ever happen in baseball that are the same.
Right. And the thing for me is when you have instant replay, which look, I understand why it's there, but now they're using it to break down too many things, okay? You look at the neighborhood play. That is no longer doable in Major League Baseball, because if you want to get down to it, a guy just hit into a double play. Wait a minute, it looks like the second baseman came off the bag before he had full possession of the ball. Let's check it out.
Which is part of the game.
And it's part of the game, but what bothers me...
Thanks, Chase Utley.
Base is loaded, okay? Guy hits a ground ball, not even a ground ball, a line drive down the left field line. It hits the foul line. Chalk flies up. Everybody's running around. Foul ball.
No
okay.
Yeah.
So now the umpire calls foul. Everybody stops. They replay it. Where are the runners?
Yeah, at that point, it's probably a ground rule double.
Runners?
Ground rule double?
No, they would. I don't know what they would do with it. I don't know the specific rules, but you know what I mean? That ball bounces and then goes right back to the wall. Look at Aaron Judge last night. Aaron Judge was all the way in the right center field gap that when Benintendi tripled, it took him forever to get to the ball. But if that's down the line a little bit more and says, hold on, you know, is it a double? Is it a triple? How many runs score? You're messing with the flow of the game, as John said.
I like the chalk. Chalk, I grew up with chalk.
Mm-hmm.
If the umpire sees chalk, it's fair.
Yes, true.
If he doesn't see chalk, it's foul.
Agreed.
Why do we need a camera to tell us this?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's a point where, I mean, I think it's bigger than the three of us here. Obviously, they've had baseball players coming out like Lou Maloney, the former Red Sox, Paul Aduca, the former Met, Dodger, the whole deal. They both came out and they said the instant replay was made for Angel Hernandez, that his calls are atrocious, and that, I mean, I play amateur baseball on the weekends, and I've seen plays, and you kind of look at people, but the baseball has a human element. There's a human element to it. Speak to me.
Umpires have strike zones.
Yes.
Everybody knows what they are.
Yes.
You know he's a high strike zone, a wide strike zone, or if he's having a bad day, little bitty tiny strike zone. Okay?
Yes.
That was part of the personality of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You worried about the crew that was showing up.
Right.
And guys that got stuck in Detroit because there was no plane.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about these things. I'm going back into the 1960s. Now, the crews have turned into, we're counting on them to be AI.
Pretty much.
If they don't get it right, we complain about them. You always say kill the umpire. If the man's got a small strike zone, you live with it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You adjust.
I mean, my problem is not necessarily the strike zone. The strike zone is the strike zone. My problem is just outs. You know, if there's an out where the guy's safe and he blatantly calls him out, and then you could see on the instant replay on the screen, and 50,000 people are sitting there in their seat and they paid $300 for the ticket instead of spending money on their kids and their family, I think that the people deserve that satisfaction, so to speak.
All right, I'll try to adjust. I do like umpires making mistakes. It's part of the game.
It is. But that's what I'm saying.
Like, ball players make mistakes too.
Yep.
Right?
And that's why they created, you know, if you're unhappy with a ruling that a field umpire makes, you go to the home plate umpire and you go to an appeal and you say, dude, he messed that play up. Did you see it? Do you have another viewpoint on the play? Can you express to me that? And instead of doing that, they just go right to Chelsea. They call him up. They put the headphones on.
Mm-hmm.
And some guy in Chelsea is determining.
I worked in that room. I worked in the replay room. So it's all the umpires. It's all umpires. It's all non-uniformed field umpires. What they do is they have a replay crew. So it'll be the top of the top umpires. Angel Hernandez has been in that room as well. I've been in that room with him. Okay. And it's nice to have that other pair of eyes, because what they do in that room, they don't just watch one replay. They have as many feeds as the stadium and the broadcast will allow, and they will look, and sometimes it does take 5, 6, and 7 minutes. But I will say this in defense of the umpires. This gave me a brand new appreciation, because they don't take it lightly. They take it very seriously.
I wish I could remember the year, but the Yankees were playing Baltimore for the playoffs. This is the Yankees on their rise, you know, when they became
that
monsters.
That was, I think, 95. That was
and
probably
right field, and yeah. A young man reached in 96. with a glove.
Jeffrey Mayer.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he interfered with the ball.
Yep.
We did not have replay.
Right. Richie Garcia blew that call.
Right. That was a bad call that launched the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And you know who else it launched? Derek Jeter, because Derek Jeter was the guy who hit the ball. Not saying that Jeter wouldn't be Jeter, but there was his moment.
I like the call. I like the mistake. We all remember it. Who'd remember a camera 20 years later?
I know, but the thing is...
So it's part of the flavor of the game. Baltimore can complain today, but the fact is they've had calls like that too.
Very much so. And do you know who's behind the plate tonight for Game 4 of the Yankees-Red Sox series?
Angel Hernandez.
Good, fine.
So he can't possibly mess up any other play?
Yes, he can. He can mess it up for both teams.
There will be no strikes called tonight.
Exactly right.
You know what?
You better swing at the first pitch, because I'm not going to get... Nope, that's it.
You know what? It's one thing if a guy has a bad day. We all remember 1985, Don Denkinger, the umpire at first base, called, I believe it was George Orta of the Kansas City Royals, safe.
That's in a World Series.
And he was out in a World Series, which led to the Royals' comeback. Royals win game 7, 11-0. They win the 85 World Series. The Cardinals go home with nothing. They should have won the World Series because of that play. That would have iced the game for them. Now you look at this guy, Angel Hernandez. This isn't anything new. He has done this his entire career. He's done it against the Mets. He's done it against the Cubs. He's done it against the Royals, the Orioles, the Yankees, the Indians. Fair-minded. Yeah, he's an equal opportunity offender.
Exactly right.
But Los Angeles Dodgers, 1978. Mm-hmm. Reggie Jackson threw his hip out and interfered with the ball.
Sure.
Right? Fine. Yeah. A camera would have shown us that.
Yeah.
Without the camera, it was a judgment call in the field. Who could tell where he was, where the ball was? Mm-hmm. You let it go. It was in Dodger Stadium.
It was at Yankee Stadium. That play was at Yankee Stadium.
Was it?
Yep.
I remember it in Dodger Stadium, but that's... That's why you don't count on memory.
Sorry, I didn't mean to correct you.
But in any event, that's another instance of a camera would have deprived the Yankees of a launch point.
Of course. It happens in every sport. You remember in 2004, there were a lot of cameras. There was no real instant replay at that time. You could not challenge a play. Bronson Arroyo gets A-Rod to ground ball to first base. Bronson Arroyo catches the ball from the catcher. A-Rod swipes his hand, knocks the ball out. One of the umpires saw it, and instead of the Yankees scoring and getting the score close, A-Rod, you're out.
What are they doing with the double play now? Do they actually count on the ghost double play? Are they breaking up the ghost double play?
The neighborhood play is essentially out of baseball because...
That's wrong.
The replay.
That actually puts people at risk.
Oh, yep. I would agree.
Because they don't want to be on that bag when somebody's coming.
Exactly correct. I think the in the neighborhood play is fantastic. I think the Chase Utley play is not fantastic, obviously, which is why they made the rule, correct?
Yeah, you're right. Before, when Chase Utley slid into Ruben Tejada and broke his leg, that's when this whole thing started.
What about blocking the home plate?
That's changed too. That's changed too. That's the Buster Posey rule.
Uh-huh.
You have to give the runner now a fair pathway to the plate.
Yeah, they changed it totally. It's amazing to me because, you know, and obviously you could be sensitive.
Are we going
to
go to flag football? Is that where we're going?
It might be. You could also be sensitive to this in the fact that the reason why that exists is because people were getting too many concussions. Buster Posey got hit, and how long was he out for, Lou? Like 2 weeks?
Who?
A month? Posey?
Oh,
when he got
no, he got.
Was that the season, right?
He was done for a while. He had a broken leg, and it was bad.
But he also had a concussion,
right?
Yeah. So it was like a myriad of different injuries that happened.
It put pressure on the third base coach to make the call.
True.
You don't send somebody with brittle legs or your top star barreling down against a catcher who's a brick wall. You just don't do it.
True. And also, you look at what Pete Rose did to. The guy in the
Ray Fosse, yeah, in the All-Star game.
But they train catchers like that.
Right.
That's what
Very
they're
true.
For.
Right. Very true.
And they're supposed to, the third base coach is responsible for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a part of baseball.
And when he gives the run signal, That's on him. That's not on the catcher. That's not on the play. That's on the third base coach.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets the runner hurt, it's him, because the runner doesn't have any judgment. He's just going to obey the signal.
That's a very good point. Or sometimes run right through the signal. It's happened.
Now, a detail also about the game
that
I'm worried about where it's going here is that the pitch count for pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
It's unreal.
Yeah, everybody hits 100 pitches and take them right out.
It's a cult.
Mm-hmm.
Their arms are good for 200 pitches.
Easily.
And that's how it was done. That's why you finished games once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're protecting the arms any better than they used to. Everybody's going to have Tommy John surgery eventually. It was just an unnatural
motion
with the arm.
Yep.
What are you going to say, that I'm going to keep his arm longer? No. It doesn't work that way. So why do they do it? I understand they make the middle relief premier. Good for them. But still, you don't need so much middle relief if you let a guy go eight innings.
Exactly correct. I think they got to trust your guys. And I mean, even look at last night, Nathan Eovaldi, on his 100th pitch, he was throwing 100 miles an hour. 78th pitch, he's throwing 100 miles an hour.
He was good for a shutout.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they could have left him in there.
And he did exactly what the Red Sox needed to do. They went through their bullpen. David Price gave them absolutely nothing in game two.
Mm-hmm.
And Eovaldi needed to pitch at least six or seven innings.
Eovaldi had Tommy John surgery.
He has had it a couple of times, yeah. I believe.
What's he doing with 100 mile per hour fastballs? There's something bionic.
He's always had an electric arm. Mm-hmm. It was just the control. The strike zone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was always the control that he had problems with.
He was a Yankee.
A Marlin.
He was a Marlin first. Right. He came up with the Marlin.
And they rushed him.
And they rushed him, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then he had some arm issues, and then the Yankees took a flyer on him. And I think he pitched okay for the Yankees. He was definitely topping out easily at a free and easy 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
I want to see him against Yelich.
Oh, I mean,
that would be a World Series matchup.
You may.
I hope you get your wish. How about that? I hope you get your wish, Yelich, and it starts tonight.
The Yelich machine right now, I'd like to. I'm
so
looking
good.
For Kershaw against Yelich.
That'll
be first game.
What's going to happen. It's going to be him and Yelich facing off. I mean, obviously they face off in the regular season too, correct? Brewers are still in the NL?
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
well,
no,
there you
go. But I want to see this in the world, because Yelich got hot the last 2 weeks of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He's good, but he got 600 on-base percentage.
He was just amazing.
Right. And now you can't even walk him because he'll score on you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I want to see that. I also want to see Sale. What I saw Eovaldi, that's better than Sale. That's a better weapon than Sale. There's more variety.
You know what? It's a little bit different, because I'm always partial to hard throwing left handers, because they just mess everybody up, because they come, especially the way Sale comes sidearm that way, and he can mess up a lefty. But hey, it's a good problem to have if you're Boston, to have those two guys.
And there was no tricks on Eovaldi. He just said, here,
right,
try to hit.
That's exactly it. Well, when you're up, when you're up 8-1, 8-0, 11-1.
He was pitching like that when it was 1-0 and when it was 3-0.
Right, but it gets easier the later innings. It's like, here it is, hit it, see what you can do.
All right, last question.
Yeah.
The Yankees had a good year, won 100 games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Boston is an unusual team.
Mm-hmm.
Losing to this team is no disgrace.
I don't think so at all. I think everything they've done this year, they won 100 games handily. They were how many games over 500?
Something like 75.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous. Yeah. And I come from, obviously being a Met fan, where 500 is great. Yeah. You're 500, dude, we're killing it.
Yeah.
These guys are 70 games over 500.
Well, real Met fans don't feel that
you
way.
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean, though.
But I mean,
54 games. 54,
was the high water mark for the year.
And Benintendi, what a year
he's great.
Had.
I love
score
that.
Score 100 runs.
Brock Holt, too. When the Mets were looking to make some moves,
they could have gotten Brock Holt.
Xander Bogaerts, and Brock Holt.
Didn't Holt hit the cycle last
year? First time in postseason history.
Wow.
First time in postseason history.
And it's great, because people this morning are like, well, that doesn't count. He hit the last home run off Romine. Come on. It counts.
It counts. Listen. Don't blame him, because that's who the Yankees had to put in a pitcher.
Exactly correct.
Also, Yelich hits the cycle, so we want to see Yelich.
That's a good point. But he doesn't have the Brock Holt. He doesn't have the Brock Holt dance at second base. He doesn't have that dance at second base.
Wait. Yeah. Let's do something here.
Talk to me.
What is the cycle? Let's not.
Okay.
Be too
so
inside.
The cycle is you hit a single, you hit a double, you hit a triple, and then you hit a home run.
In no particular order.
Exactly.
What is the neighborhood play?
The neighborhood play is when you have a runner on first base and the shortstop or second baseman fields the ball, first baseman, third baseman, and you get the short flip and you come across the bag before you catch the ball, and so you're in the neighborhood of the bag, and then you fire on the first base to continue the double play.
So it's not actually a double play. It's in the neighborhood.
It is, but it's because of the neighborhood play.
All right, all right. I was doing my radio host.
I love it, John. You're like an in show companion, John Batchelor.
To explain, so we're not too abstract.
Totally. Well, thank you so much, John Batchelor. You're the best.
I can't believe we went a whole session with John without talking about space.
We didn't talk about space. We didn't talk about Google Plus. We didn't talk about privacy. We didn't talk about any of that stuff.
Is there anything cool space related that we could talk about with you next time?
Actually, Planet 10.
Yes,
there's news.
Speak to me. Planet 10 update.
There's an object in the Kuiper Belt
mm-hmm.
that is unusual. It has a name. I don't remember it right now. Unusual elliptical orbit of like 3 billion years around, way deep, and then come close to the sun. Its revolution is consistent with the existence of the unfound Planet 10.
Interesting. Wow.
So we've found the small object before we found the large object.
Right, and that would be in the gravitational pull of the large...
Well, when they pass each other, you can't explain this elliptical orbit unless there's something else out there. Right.
Pulling it in.
Yeah.
The magnet, so to speak.
And that just came. That's a Planet 10 update. The thing we haven't found, we found the thing that shouldn't be there unless there is a Planet 10.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
See well, that?
John, listen.
You have to get your fill.
Baseball,
of
Planet
space.
10, the neighborhood yes. play, the cycle.
And yes. the solar system does not have instant replay.
No, not yet. Not yet. Right. Angel Hernandez hasn't made it into the solar
That's
system
right.
as yet.
That's right.
John Batchelor, thank you so much.
Thank
You're the best.
You.
He is the best. His name is John Batchelor. He is really tall.
We should get a John Batchelor rap. Cool. We should get a John Batchelor rap.
That's good. Well, I'll work on that. We'll work on that. We'll have my people call your people, call John Batchelor's people.
Yeah, we'll do
call
some,
Angel Hernandez's
we'll
people.
We'll do some lunch, Dave.
It'll be
Valley.
Fantastic. John Batchelor, you can talk about anything, and out of nowhere, it comes out with a Planet 10 update.
I had to ask him because he is our resident Mr. Wizard.
Yep.
If you want to call him that. I know he's not doing much science experiments in
uh-huh.
here. But he is absolutely brilliant. And if you don't get that information out of him, you're missing out. So I don't want to deprive our listeners of the great space age talk with Mr. John Batchelor.
Well, he's absolutely tremendous. On this past episode... Well, he's absolutely tremendous. On this episode, we've talked Banksy. We've talked Rick and Morty. We've talked Doctor Who. We talked the movie Tag. We talked baseball. We talked Angel Hernandez. We talked Instant Replay.
Instant Replay.
There you go, baby. I love it.
Oh, God, I hate
you.
That song. I hate that song.
We've done a lot in this 30-minute episode.
Yes, we
we've
have.
Done a lot. You know, as Howard Stern says, we've said it all. We've said it all.
I forgot
We've
that.
We've said a lot. We're going to have a guest on eventually this week. We'll let you know what it is
we'll
when we
it
drop
out.
It.
Yeah, today was a very weird show. Today was a great show, but a weird show. I actually produce a bunch of podcasts, as you know, mm-hmm. sports podcasts mm-hmm. and political
mm-hmm.
podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here hanging out with my friend in his office, and who do I see but legendary sports writer, author, host of the Sports Reporters podcast, Mitch Albom.
He's famous.
Who I work with every Monday and Friday. And there he is. And I look across the hallway and he sees me. And it was like old home week. And we embraced. And hey, good to see you. Good to see you too. And then we went on our way. But it was just very weird. Not like you're not expecting to see him. And then all of a sudden, there he is. And I will leave you with this.
Speak to me.
I got to hang out with John Cena today.
Oh!
Super, super dude.
Very
super
nice.
Super cool dude.
And now what's his tagline?
Can't see me.
There it is.
I just hit the microphone. Can't see me, and I'm rubbing my hand in front of my face.
There it is. And these people that are listening to us,
they can't see us
they
either.
They can't see us either. All right, we'll see you next time on
Pop Culture Meltdown.
If you'd like to email the show, email popculturemeltdown@gmail.com and find us on Instagram at popculturemeltdown. Find John Batchelor on The John Batchelor Show every weeknight on Westwood One and follow on Twitter at The Batchelor Show. The voice of Pop Culture Meltdown is Dan Kelly, voice talent and one of the best human beings on the planet. For bookings, go to dankellyvo.com. Special thanks to myself, producer Laura Ponte, our graphic designer Ricky Soto, Tim Einkel with OG, and of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Rudsky. This has been Pop Culture Meltdown with your hosts, Chris Libertini and Lou Pellegrino.
They are intelligent. They are smarter than the most up-to-date supercomputers. We cannot underestimate it.